that the union is the watchdog. The union is the voice box.
Yes.
And if the union is weakened, then your power is weakened. And so we really need people to be out there talking to fee payers so that they understand that it's not just another, you know, 50, 30 or 70 bucks in their pocket every month. What we're looking at is what your lifetime earnings will be. Because if you quiet the voice of unions, then you won't be able to have to negotiate successful contracts. You won't be able to work on issues that are important to your community. And so, again, it is extremely important that you get out there and that you talk to those fee payers so that they have a clear understanding of the actions that the Supreme Court is taking. So once again, Brother Allen, I want to thank you very much for coming and talking to our listeners. Well, listeners, that's it. It's a wrap. Thank you. Holla.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Cebu Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the first annual Portland Bob Marley Birthday Party, Saturday, February 6th, starting at 6:30 p.m. at the Melody Ballroom in Portland. The life of Bob Marley will be celebrated with live reggae by Simba Puma and the Roaring Lions, by DJs Reggae Bob and Pablo One from Kingston, Jamaica, and live streaming from Kingston's own Bob Marley Festival. Again, that's the first annual Portland Bob Marley Birthday Party, Saturday, February 6th, starting at 6:30 p.m. at the Melody Ballroom at 615 Southeast Alder Street in Portland. More information can be found at cebu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
On Monday, February 15th, at 6:30 p.m., Prison Pipeline will air a Valentine's Day special to bring to light the fact that, because of incarceration, many people are separated from their friends, family, and lovers on Valentine's Day. We will be reading your short messages to your friends and loved ones on air. So whether you are behind bars and reaching out, or are out and reaching in, we welcome you to mail or email us your Valentine's messages. Our email address is kbooppc@gmail.com and our address is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Address your messages to Prison Pipeline Collective. Then tune in on February 15th at 6:30 p.m. to hear your messages read on air.
Baby, you understand me now.
Good evening, greetings, and welcome to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. This evening, we have two guests from the national organization called Critical Resistance. And if you've been listening quite a bit, we've had several guests on from Critical Resistance. And one of them is back with us, and we have some other folks alongside Masai after we get some other folks on the phone. Masai, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine, Adam. Doing fine. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. We're just getting somebody on the phone here, one of your distinguished colleagues. And so I know we have a bunch of stuff to talk about tonight because there's a few related events in Portland that I know you were going to kind of speak to. And for any listeners who aren't familiar with critical resistance, can you maybe just give just a very brief, you know, kind of bio on the organization?
Okay. Briefly, critical resistance is a national movement comprised of folks trying to develop a movement to abolish the prison industrial complex in the United States. And I should say now, I strongly suggest that listeners go onto the website, can find a lot of information about critical resistance, the history, because I won't be able to cover it all now. But I got to emphasize that part. It's about abolishing the prison industrial complex. It's not about making prisoners better, making prisons better or more acceptable, or definitely not about jail expansion. And it came about when there was a lot of folks in the United States that saw the need to develop that kind of a movement. And it took a lot of work and a lot of effort, but folks eventually got it off the ground.
Great. We also have somebody else on from Portland Critical Resistance. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, hi. This is Corey Lira from the Portland Chapter of Critical Resistance.
Yeah, Corey, can you just talk a little bit about what the chapter is doing in Portland and how that connects to any larger ongoing national projects?
Absolutely. So right now our chapter has a few different programs that we are working on, our different projects, and we've been around for about 2.5 years, and one of those, our longest running program, is our mail program, where we get together monthly and we do political education with folks in Oregon and Washington prisons by writing letters back and forth and sending articles and books. So that's one of our long-standing programs, and we're always looking for more folks to help out. And then we are working on a campaign right now on reducing our reliance on police as first responders for mental health issues and calls and crises. And so that's our big campaign that we're working on right now, is really looking at what do we need in Portland as community-based alternatives to the current situation right now, which is if someone's in crisis over mental health, the police are called, not a mental health professional. And so we're really looking at how can we shift that reliance back into the community for alternatives.
That's great. Can you say more about that project? I mean, what does it entail? Because it sounds very, you know, broad in its scope as far as what would need to be done.
Mm-hmm. I think right now, since we're in the, you know, beginning of the campaign, we're really looking at the research phase and identifying, you know, what is going on in Portland when it comes to that that pipeline between, you know, if someone picks up the phone and then a police officer shows up. And we know historically that in Portland has, you know, been the result of many deaths by police in Portland when someone calls because of a mental health situation. So I think what we're looking at right now is identifying, like, what is the history in Portland? What are the pieces right now that are in, you know, just exist on a structural level in Portland? And we've done some community kind of hall-based work around identifying with community members, like, what it is that would be that alternative. And the largest thing that came out of those conversations was this desire to have a community-led, you know, group or collective or organization that could be called instead of the police, so that people can have access to professionals, like actual mental health professionals, to come in and, you know, intervene in these situations without a reliance on the police. So right now I think we're looking at figuring out what's the map of Portland when it comes to that, so we can actually start supporting community members building out that alternative.
That's great. And can you, we'll get back to it too, but can you maybe just briefly mention how people get in touch? Where's your Facebook page or good email?
Oh, sure, probably. So on Facebook, you can just look up Critical Resistance Portland, and our page will come up, and you can like it. You can also always send us an email at crpdx@criticalresistance.org, and you can send us an email, and we'll get you on our, you know, email listserv, or you can let us know that you're interested in getting more involved. And we even have a volunteer night coming up on February 9th. For folks to get more involved and kind of come and hear more and, you know, see which of different ways you could tap into doing some work in Portland for abolition.
So, Corey, it sounds like you are writing to folks incarcerated in Oregon and Washington, and a lot of people are, you know, express interest in doing things of that nature, but yeah, usually aren't familiar with, you know, navigating the system. How do you even get in touch with a prisoner if you don't necessarily have a friend or family member who's incarcerated? Can you talk about how that works when you're writing to people? How do people get in touch with the organization? And then from there, what does that work look like? Because you mentioned that there's political education or what have you. Can you say more about that?
Sure. Well, you know, it's funny because actually the list of everyone in Oregon and Washington prisons is public information.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone actually can go online and find, you know, the names of folks and reach out. We typically rely on both, you know, reaching out to the folks who are in these prisons and letting them know that we exist and then welcoming that, you know, communication if so desired. And then oftentimes, you know, and more often, I think, than not, we get people reaching out to us, hearing by word of mouth that we exist. So we have a fair amount of mail that comes in every month, and some long-standing folks that we've been communicating with for years now, actually. And so if someone were interested in getting involved, what they could do is, you know, reach out to us, let us know, and we can invite them to the next mail night where folks can come. They can read a little bit more about what we send. They can start sending out, you know, initial letters to people who are interested. And then if they're interested in doing more of the kind of structural piece of helping us with the program, there's other ways to get involved as well. And we send out, you know, pieces of, like, our prisons obsolete, or we send out copies of Abolition Now, which is one of our publications through CR. So folks can also engage in conversation based on those works and others with folks who are interested.
Sounds like some great ongoing projects. And again, folks can look at the Facebook page, look up Critical Resistance Portland, and get involved. It sounds like there's a few events that are up and coming here. And also support prisoners in different ways. And one of them, as you mentioned, kind of the political education piece, even supporting some of the mental health on the inside, maybe other aspects of health. And I know that both of you, and Messiah in particular, also has some focus on looking at and keeping updated with and advocating for the particular health of certain prisoners that are locked up. And Masai, can you say a little bit more about that and some of the folks' health conditions that you're kind of basically struggling with right now? Masai, are you still there?
Oh, I'm still here. Sorry, I put it on mute. Can you hear me?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
Okay. Well, some of the individual cases, because I should also mention I'm with the Jericho Medical Committee, and some of the individual cases we're working on now is like Imam Jameer Al-Amin, formerly known as Rap Brown. He's currently in Tucson, Arizona. Mm-hmm. And as some folks may know, there was a massive campaign to even get him to get him treatment because of the health conditions that he suffered. Right now, one of the things he has is called intermediate state myeloma, and it's cancer of the plasma cells. He also has a disorder called Sjögren's disorder. So anyway, after a lot of work, we got him transferred to Tucson. But like with other folks, the idea is like to get him treatment, but also to ultimately get him out.
Mm-hmm.
We're also working around a brother named Seth Hayes that's in New York. He has hepatitis, diabetes, several other conditions that we're simultaneously working on that, but at the same time, pushing to at the very least get him out either on parole, which is coming up for parole hearing, and folks can find out about his case. And Imam Jameel on the Jericho website, we're pushing for either parole or the compassionate release. We're also working on the case, in particular, a brother named Amin Kabir. He's in a federal medical facility in Minnesota. He has COPD. Has a tremendous problem breathing. We're working on trying to get either lung transplant or compassionate release. One of the holdups that's continually been in his case is that there's spots that there's little tumors or nodes that's on his chest, and they won't let him get the lung transplant as long as those are there. Now, he'll have one set that'll go away, but then another one will come up. So every time that happens, we have to go through a 6 months and a 1 year waiting period. So those are three of the ones particularly Jericho's working on. And there's a lot of other cases, and I'm not sure how much time I have, so I won't go through all of them, but there's a brother, Kamal Siddiqui. He's in Georgia. He has severe health problems. We're working on that. And like I said, because of time, I won't go through all of them, but look at the website. But when Corey was talking, one of the things he talked about, like, in terms of, like for the treatment of folks with mental health issues, critical resistance along with other folks, like, and I think you mentioned that too, about where people put the resources, you know, like the resources that they use in prisons, the resources that they use towards war. We definitely see that, you know, a better need for that, a better use for that being in the community. And I want to touch on something because I know we're going to talk about Mutulu.
Yeah.
And see, for me, the thing about Mutulu, because I kind of look forward to this, Mutulu is also a citizen of the Republic of New Africa. And I'm a conscious, what we call conscious. We don't mean the other folks ain't conscious, but we're conscious of our, you know, of our right to exercise self-determination up to and including independence. Mm-hmm. Mutulu was one of the early people involved. Mutulu was actually actively involved in that movement, not just saying it. You know, he was in the Black Legionnaires when there was a shootout in Detroit, and, you know, the state did a vamp thing like they sometimes do and don't win. So Mutulu actually, you know, like he's been actually involved. But what we see is in the PG, one of the things he and other folks struggle for is the creation of that independent nation where we're talking about, you know, society is free of human exploitation of others as is humanly possible. So when folks be talking about a thing like, you know, you can't really abolish the PIC because it's always going to be there, that's not the way we see it. Mm-hmm. Now, other folks have different ways where, like, they see eliminating it. But for us, the fact that when we struggle for independence, we're struggling for getting away from a system that relies on the oppression of others, the exploitation of other humans. So Mutulu, in a lot of ways, he most definitely ties in the vision that I have, both in CR and Jericho, and the division other folks have. I know at some point we'll be talking about the fact when Mutulu was out there, like he was engaged with Lincoln Detox and the acupuncture program out there, mm-hmm. That they was engaged. Well, that was part of the effort, you know, again, him and others, like, to provide quality health care to our people, you know, with the resources that we have. And, of course, you know, we live in a society where you can't have that. Folks can't even start thinking that maybe we can provide meet our needs. They can't have that. But in Lincoln Detox, if ever folks ever look at the history of that, they'll see, like, there was folks from the New African Independence Movement there. There was folks from the Puerto Rican Independence Movement, all actively engaged in the community. Again, showing folks what we could do for ourselves. So, again, he's been there. They also had a training program. And I know, like, a lot of times folks aren't aware of that. And it was a long time. One of the things that, you know, one of my schools of state throughout there was that they wouldn't license folks initially. Mm-hmm. So it meant for a lot of folks, it was like a thing of trying to practice something but not being able to earn a living.
Mm-hmm.
So the practice and the struggle, it wasn't just like the rhetoric. It was actually being out there. Mutulu, as some other folks know, Mutulu has sought to educate prisoners inside about how they could better take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it's been mentioned here, but there was like a year or so ago when the doctors inside wanted to amputate one of Mutulu's legs because of a condition he had. Well, he fought along with others. He won the fight, and he was given the right to prescribe his own treatment. And as a result of that, Mutulu still has his leg right now. I mean, none of us could know what's happening down the road. But it's like, again, it's like when we're given the opportunity to give other opinions, other than what they give us, a lot of times it comes out a whole lot better.
Mm-hmm. For folks just tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. We're here with organizers from the organization Critical Resistance, and we're addressing a lot of different issues about prisoner support. One of them is supporting prisoners, everything from mental health and physical health or what have you. And we just kind of gave some updates of a bunch of folks who are actually political prisoners and come from various aspects of the civil rights era, Black Liberation Movement, Black Panthers, etc. And it's interesting, too, that just to note that, I mean, all these folks now are you know, well in their 50s and 60s, maybe even plus, are some of the people who have endured some of the longest incarcerations in the world as political prisoners and prisoners in general, and want to also kind of note the fact that a lot of their work in the first place had to do with fighting for community health and safety, right? For especially Black communities fighting against police brutality. And Corey, I'm just going to go back to you if you want to kind of comment on that. Yeah, yeah.
Just one moment before you go into that, because sure. I have to emphasize this a lot. For me, it's like I have to emphasize the fact that a lot of us, it's not even civil rights. It's definitely not civil rights. An independence movement is a human rights issue. And one of the things we see now is that, like, folks sometimes, because some of our most, not necessarily the most efficient or best organizers, but some of the most articulate organizers have either been killed or they're inside. Otherwise, we would keep that in front of folks. There's a seriousness about independence. Because what will happen sometimes is the state will give us the benefit of at least, you know, recognizing, like what I call the friendly opposition. You know, it's like either part of the system or making the system better. When we talk about independence, we are serious. You know, breaking all ties, not even, I mean, and I can relate to and respect the folks who want to control police in different areas, but we're talking about independence, land and independence. And actually, several of the folks I mentioned, along with some I didn't, that's what the struggle was about. When we made that shift in a very real way, like L. Howard and Malik El-Shabazz said, you know, revolutions were based on land. So when the provisional government was founded in 68, we looked at what a nation really had. So I just got to say that, because that's one of the things some of us want to keep out there more and more. It's about independence. Otherwise, you know, it's a little bit backwards for us. Okay. Go ahead, Corey. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
Yeah, so Corey, do you want to kind of talk about the kind of alternatives to the police? But, you know, again, it's kind of this on-the-ground form of, you know, not just prisoner support, but really of even community support, you know, before people end up getting locked up, because they're kind of, if the idea is they're getting kind of protected from the police, you know, from getting into all kinds of different confrontations and altercations with the cops kind of in the street, you know, as opposed to having these community alternatives.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think it's important to see the connection between policing and prisons and jails, you know, and in that prisons and jails now are really seen as health facilities. They're places that, you know, when someone is, you know, arrested and is having mental health issues, like that this so-called, you know, rehabilitation through incarceration is going to, you know, help someone or keep someone from harming others on the streets or whatnot, right? So there's this kind of assumed component of prisons and jails being seen as that health provider. And we know that that's not true. You know, prisons and jails are not healthcare providers, and the best healthcare is community-based healthcare. And I, you know, I point that out because I think it's important to see, like, what happens when we shift away from actually providing real health care. And, you know, the studies show that, you know, in a community where if a hospital closes, the jail and prison population rises. So, you know, I think then if we're talking about, like, how can we build out these alternatives, it's really about, you know, making sure people get the adequate health care they deserve, but also really severing our tie with this, you know, prison industrial complex that wants to, you know, take advantage of our population through this incarceration system. So I really think that our campaign is about saying, what can we do individually to really address creating the healthcare and creating the care that we want on a community level. That doesn't mean, you know, something's happening and you call it, you know, this third party that really isn't trained or intended to ever serve as healthcare providers, which right now we do, and that's the police.
Mm-hmm. And are there things that are helpful for prisoners as far as supporting their, you know, physical health when they're inside, as far as people on the outside? What kind of things are there connections for?
Well, I think there's different, there's definitely different direct service organizations that do, you know, different kind of support. I'm thinking of some even, not necessarily in Oregon, but like in LA, there's a lot of groups that work with the women in the women's prisons down there to, you know, address the great harm that's happened through like forced sterilization and such. And so there's groups that really advocate for folks on the inside. I think in Oregon, you know, nothing really comes to mind. And I think that's part of the reason why we're doing this work is because there's not a ton happening here to address what's happening locally. And, you know, I think our hope is if we're helping to address the community alternatives, we're going to help folks not end up in prison, because, you know, people who are having police called on and, you know, for mental health support inevitably are getting arrested and charged with essentially not being well. Mm-hmm. And so I think the question of what can we do on the inside is a really important one, and I think it's one that we're hoping to address, but it's also one I'm hoping that we're all thinking about, mm-hmm. because there isn't a lot right now.
Right, and then it's kind of up to the prisoners themselves to kind of figure
exactly.
it out, choose their own adventure or what have you.
Exactly, and that's, you know, I think for me politically and for RCR chapter in Portland, like, we are all about self-determination. Like, it's not for us to, you know, to go in and be like, you all need to do this for your own health, right? Like, this is about folks being able to have that self-determination on what it means to be able to have that health care that people deserve.
Mm-hmm. So I want to take it back to this theme of, you know, the health of prisoners, you know, inside, and how they might be supporting themselves, like people like Mutulu, who have been performing, you know, acupuncture and, you know, trying to do natural medicine, things like that, for a long time. And there is an event here in Portland, which is coming up this Sunday, and it's February 7th. This is a KBOO-sponsored event, and is offering a community acupuncture and massage fundraiser for Mutulu. He's coming up for parole, and as part of the plan is to have some money saved up for him to get off of his feet, and then some. That's going to take place at the Seven Star Acupuncture, and right over here by the station, actually. Again, it's a KBOO-sponsored event, and it's this Sunday, February 7th. So we encourage folks to look at the Facebook page for that community acupuncture and massage fundraiser for Mutulu Shakur. And you can click on the link on there to make an appointment. So look for the Appointment Genius link that's on there, so you can schedule either acupuncture or massage for Sunday, and all that goes to help Mutulu. So, Masai, can you talk a little bit more about him, how he's doing? This whole piece on the transition, you know, back into our communities.
I don't have a real recent update. I do know that, you know, just like, you know, what you're planning out there, there's others just planning on how we can support him when he get out, including looking at where he may eventually end up being at. So there's efforts in that regard. People are staying in touch with his family as much as they can. And as you can imagine, when you've been inside that long, there's a lot of connecting that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. Sure, and you knew him many years ago as well, or
no? Actually, because when Mutulu and them was out, because I think I went in '75. For those who don't know, I'm also with the BLA, so I went in as a citizen of Republic of Alaska. When I went in, they came in later. Because mm-hmm. I went in '75. They came in later. Him and some other good comrades, but not personally. I just know a lot of the folks that he know, and I know of him because of the shooting that happened in Detroit mm-hmm. around the time the government was founded. But yeah, a lot of his comrades who are out there. I also know some folks very well who who went through the training program with them with in Lincoln Detox.
Yeah, so if listeners aren't familiar with Mutulu Shakur's case, it's worth also kind of looking that up, especially this particular history. If people might be familiar with, you know, Asada Shakur, Black Liberation Army, you know, folks might or might not have heard of him, his relationship even to Tupac Shakur and all that. So it's a really rich history there. And so we want folks to know, you know, about this case. And he's also in a transition for reentry, and want to emphasize that community acupuncture and massage fundraiser on Sunday, February 7th. So look out for a link for that, and how you can sign up for an appointment this Sunday. As far as other events upcoming or getting involved in general, Corey, can you again give some of the links for Portland Critical Resistance, and also any, you mentioned there might be some volunteer orientations coming up and prisoner writings. Can you say anything about when those might be?
Yeah, so we haven't set a date for our next mail event, but if folks like our Facebook page, which again is at Critical Resistance Portland, they'll be able to see when we post that next event. The same for our volunteer night. We will be having our next volunteer night on February 9th, and we'll post more online. And then folks can also email us if they're, you know, if you know you want to volunteer or really interested, sending us a direct email at crpdx@criticalresistance.org is a really great way of letting us know you want to get involved.
Well, great. Thanks so much, Corey. And also Prison Pipeline in 2 weeks, which is going to be, so another, you know, two Mondays from tonight on February 15th, Prison Pipeline will be sharing Valentine's Day messages for people incarcerated to their families, or from families to folks who are incarcerated. So feel free to send your short Valentine's Day message to kbooppc@gmail.com, or you can also snail mail it to the station. So again, that email is kbooppc@gmail.com. And from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on February 15th, we'll be doing Valentine's Day